You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA over at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. We're doing mailbag tomorrow. Entire episode will be dedicated to your reaction, your questions, and your voicemails. So don't be afraid. Hit us up. Text messages and voicemails at 331-979-1369, or you can always hit us up on social media as well. On today's episode, we have Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation covering the Bulls, the NBA, and college buckets over there. We talked through the Jabari Parker signing, through Zach LaVine re-signing, what this team's going to look like in year two of the rebuild, whether or not he thinks this team is going to be competitive, and whether or not there's really a clear direction of this rebuild. So we touch on all of those things. Fred Hoiberg was included in a peek at 2019's NBA draft class and so much more. So without further ado, here's Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation.
We are really proud of all of us, why we did. People criticize us from the start. Now you can see Antoine Griezmann.
It's going to be in English, Antoine. It's going to be English under pressure.
I love Derrick Rose.
That's a very valid point.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls one of our favorite basketball minds to talk to. He is Ricky O'Donnell, college hoops editor and NBA assignment editor over at SB Nation. You can follow Ricky and get all of his great content on Twitter at SBN underscore Ricky. Ricky, how's the summer going, man? Great to talk to you again. How are things? Have you calmed down? I know I was very upset about the Jabari signing. I'm trying to rationalize. I'm trying to be optimistic about it. I know you have your... let's just say doubts, based on what I've seen from you and your reaction so far. Where are you right now on this Jabari Parker situation?
Yeah, I want the Jabari signing to work more than I've ever wanted anything to work. I love Jabari Parker. I've been following his career since he was a high school player at Simeon. I think the first time I saw him play, he was actually a freshman playing on Simeon's varsity team back when I was covering high school basketball. Back in the day, I would love nothing more than for this to be a successful relationship between the Bulls and Jabari Parker. But I do think there's a lot of reasons to doubt it, mostly coming back just to the general basketball fit of how Parker's talent sort of meshed with what the Bulls already have in place. So I really hope I'm wrong. I hope Jabari Parker's awesome because I love Jabari Parker. I've never wanted to be more wrong about the Bulls, but... I do think there are plenty of reasons to be skeptical about this.
Just to kind of follow up on that, as far as Parker goes, So obviously there's been a lot of argument between Bulls fans on whether or not this guy can play the three. If it's going to work between him and Markkanen and LaVine playing two through four, and asking a lot, to be quite frank, of Robin Lopez and Wendell Carter Jr. and Chris Dunn, the three guys that maybe represent probably the best defense on their team in general. How do you see this going as far as realistic expectations next season? And who do you feel like out of these four guys, out of LaVine, Dunn, Markkanen, and even Parker, who do you think has the biggest expectations on them next season?
I think that, you know, Jabari's obviously talented, right? Like, we know he can score the basketball. I think that in a different situation, Jabari could be really successful. But you try to, you know, think of the best possible situation for Jabari. To me, that's him at the four, surrounded by a bunch of 3-and-D guys, where he could sort of carry a bigger offensive burden, use some of his one-on-one skills to break guys down off the dribble, and put himself in advantageous situations on offense while still sort of covering up his shortcomings. And then you look at what the Bulls have in place, and it's just not the type of team, I think, that's built to accommodate Jabari's talents. I do think that Jabari could potentially have a good year. I mean, if you go on YouTube right now and watch Jabari Parker's highlights from just last year when he did not, by the numbers, have a good year, the highlights are really impressive. And you can see the raw talent that made him at one time the number 2 overall draft pick. I personally wonder if just him and LaVine and the rest of these, and Dunn and the rest of these guys, are going to be able to play team basketball. If that happens, I do think it could be successful. Who has the most pressure on him? I mean, Jabari's got a ton of pressure on him because his deal isn't guaranteed for next year. So, I mean, that's the first thing. He only got a 1-year deal, essentially, because the Bulls have all the power with the team option going into year two. And then you look at LaVine. I mean, there was a lot of skepticism on whether or not he was worth that money. I'm sure he heard that. We saw him, you know, tweet at Nick Friedel, and even his girlfriend, I think, was sending messages to him. So I think LaVine has a lot to prove, too. But, you know, both those guys are talented. It's more just about becoming well-rounded players, because I think that that's the thing that really changed for Jabari Parker. Yes, he had the 2 ACL tears, but the game just evolved so quickly, and you can't really be a one-trick pony anymore. I think that that's sort of the worry with both Jabari and LaVine, is that they're pure scorers who don't bring much else to the table. Those two guys need to prove that they can play team-oriented basketball to help the Bulls make this successful.
And if we're talking about people who have the most pressure on them coming into this 18-19 Bulls season, I think another name you have to talk about is Fred Hoiberg, coming into the fourth year of his 5-year deal. Paxson made it very clear in his remarks after the season ended, and again at draft lottery night and again on draft night, that they do not plan on and do not want to go through a season like the one they just went through and tank purposefully and be a bad team and lose games purposefully. And they want to get back to being a competitive team again. And a lot of Bulls fans roll their eyes in that and say, oh, great. So, like, we blew up the Jimmy Butler Bulls, who were a first round knockout, to go back to being maybe a 7 or 8 seed again this year and being a first round knockout with a different group of guys. But it seems like that's what the Bulls want to be. At the very least, they want to be a playoff team. And technically, losing in the first round as a 7 or 8 seed counts. I still have my skepticism about whether or not this team was good enough, even in the Week East, to be a playoff team. But again, going back to Fred Hoiberg, if the Bulls and these, you know, this random group, which has now added Wendell Carter, the rookie, and Jabari Parker, the free agent signing, if they don't get it together and make a playoff spot, do you think that that's on Fred and Fred might be gone after the fourth year of this deal?
If they wanted to make the playoffs, they should have signed Nwaba. Like, if that was the overall goal, is to build the best team possible, they really didn't need to give Jabari $20 million a year. I mean, they were bidding against themselves. No one else had any cap space.
Right.
They knew he wasn't going to match. They easily could have given him $15 million a year, $14 million a year. Now, I'm fine with, you know, overpaying a little bit to get less risk on the team side, because it is only a 1-year deal. You did get the team option. And for as much as this deal, I think, reeks of the Dwayne Wade deal, and in a sense sort of exposes the Bulls at what is that they don't know what they're doing in the front office still, I do think that there just isn't much risk with this, especially for a 1-year deal. So that's my main takeaway. As for Hoiberg, I think that Hoiberg was actually pretty decent last year. I think that, you know, The biggest thing is just going to be getting the players to respect him, which was always his problem during the Butler era, and getting him to play team-oriented basketball. So right now you have a team where it's like, Dunn's going to be up for an extension, right? Dunn's also going to have the ball in his hands at all times. Dunn just saw Zach LaVine get $80 million by chucking bad shots at a low efficiency all year. It didn't matter. He still got paid. So is Dunn really going to be motivated to be this pure distributor who's really selfless and who's focusing most of his energy on defense and who's not hunting his own offense? Is that really going to be Dunn's mindset heading into the year when he needs to get a contract? Because what gets you paid in the NBA is putting up points. Like, LaVine is not a very well-rounded player. He has a ton of holes in his game, but he just got $80 million because he gets buckets. Jabari Parker, if you look at his efficiency numbers, his on-off numbers, his contributions towards winning, he just has not been a winning basketball player at all in his young career. Granted, he has had the two ACL surgeries. He got that contract for two reasons. One, it's his pedigree, being the second pick in the draft. And the other is just his scoring ability. So my worry with the Bulls this year is that everyone's going to be looking out for themselves. Can you actually make the playoffs like that? I mean, I do think it's possible because obviously the East is trash. But with that being said, you're starting a 19-year-old center, a 20-year-old power forward, two 23-year-olds and a 24-year-old. So it's going to be a young team. Everyone's basically going to need to step their games up considerably for the Bulls to even be thinking about this. But if they did want to make the playoffs, I want to know why they didn't re-sign Nwaba, because Nwaba was a winning player. I think Nwaba could have a greater impact on winning than Parker even, just because of all of the grit and hustle he shows on the defensive end. I don't know if the Bulls are going for the playoffs. I personally don't want them to. I think there is a chance signing Jabari makes them worse this year. If that happens, I mean, what the Bulls really need to do for the long-term benefit of the rebuild is to try to get a draft pick better than 7 next year, because, I mean, I compare it back to sort of the last era of Bulls basketball when they were in contention, when they hit on Noah with the 9th pick, they hit on Dang with the 7th pick, they hit on Heinrich with the 7th pick, they hit on Gordon with the 3rd pick, but what was sort of the move that took them towards real contention? That was lucking into the first pick and getting D-Rose. Mm-hmm. So to me, there's still that star perimeter player short. And remember, this year they changed the lottery odds, too. You just need to be in the top 5 or the bottom 5, I guess, to have the best odds of the number one pick. I think the Bulls need to be gunning for the number one pick in that 2019 draft. It does not look like a strong draft, but, I mean, there's a few guys who are going to be intriguing. RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, Duke, a couple other guys. So, I mean, we'll see if the Bulls can actually make the playoffs and win. But, you know, here's what I come back to. How many years did the Sixers outright tank? 4, right? Mm-hmm. Within that stretch, they made maybe the worst draft pick of the modern era with Julia Lopez for number 3 overall, who I'm sure the Bulls are going to sign now. And
it's only a matter of days until the Bulls sign Okafor.
Get Cliff Alexander, get Julia Okafor, get the band back together. We can go to all where everyone hates himself. But the thing is that the Sixers just gave themselves enough chances at stars. Like, even though they made the worst pick ever, basically, in Okafor at number 3 over Kristaps, they still came away from that rebuild with Embiid and Simmons because they gave themselves enough bites at the apple, so to speak. So I think that tanking for 1 year is stupid. It is impressive that the Bulls have been able to sort of accumulate a pretty impressive amount of talent in just 1 year. I do think ultimately that this team still has kind of a low ceiling, but it does have a high floor. Like, I expect them, you know, to eventually be a playoff team. If it's not this year, then soon. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They should be. With that being
high floor, low ceiling. That's like what we've had with the Bulls for the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, it's like, do you really want a team that's just going to lose in the first or second round? It's like, they should be thinking a little bigger. But Paxton said it today. He's like, Chicago will support a hardworking team. It's like, they just want the money. They don't care. If you think they care about winning championships or, like, competing at a high level, you're totally wrong. I mean, I think this front office has proven time and again over the last, 25 years that really they just want to make a profit more so than they care about winning championships.
Yeah, and I go back to just, you know, it's all fine and good to talk about tanking and what fans want to see as far as a blueprint for a rebuild. And then you go back to thinking on how the front office thinks and how ownership thinks as far as a rebuild should look like. And I'm stuck on one quote from Paxson's end of the year press conference, and that's the one where he said multiple times in the interview, and it's even in our new intro, is that they don't ever want to have a season like they did last year. And you look at the embarrassment that they felt was a part of rebuilding and tanking last year. And while they didn't exactly do it right last year the way that some other teams guaranteed themselves in the top three or the top five, I go back to that. And remind myself that this rebuild that the Bulls are doing is in no way going to be the same as the 76ers or the Celtics or some of these other teams who've tanked and also taken on salary dumps to acquire draft picks. So I guess if you're trying to explain it to Bulls fans, what's the most logical way to explain this rebuild to Bulls fans? Because I keep going back to the way Houston did it. And that's sort of what Gar Forman and John Paxson have said both times, is like, there was very few teams in the league that had the opportunity and had the cap space and the talent to acquire James Harden when he was on the market. So are you looking at this rebuild being more so the Bulls are hedging their bets in free agency? They won't spend big in 2019 or 2020, or even that fact they won't hit big on anybody there, but more so they're going to look around the league to stars that maybe are unhappy where they are right now and being in the best possible situation outside of other NBA teams to acquire a star should it come up in a trade.
Okay, so a few things. You got to remember the situation Harden was in at that point. He was reaching his second contract, right? He wanted the big deal. He couldn't get it from Houston. I mean, those are your similarities to Jabari, right? Harden was the third pick. Jabari was the second pick. Original team didn't want to pay him. So, I mean, Harden is such a rare example because he really just hit the stratosphere as soon as he went to Houston, and he was so young at that point. I mean, you never see a guy change teams before a second contract and that caliber of player. But it was a special situation with Oklahoma City, and, you know, Houston had a chance to go get it. Kind of similar to what the Bulls did with Jabari. I mean, it was a special situation where Milwaukee was so far over the luxury tax that they couldn't afford to pay him. He also just wasn't very good, if we're being frank about it. And also had the two ACL tears. So I think in that sense, maybe the Bulls sort of are following that plan. And then the other thing that you brought up is the idea of taking on salary to get a draft pick, right? Which is definitely like the trendy thing to do if you're a guy who spends too much time on Twitter reading about basketball. You just saw Denver do that. Brooklyn, right? Denver gave a top 12 protective pick to Brooklyn to take Kenneth Faried. But I mean, realistically, what are you going to, like, the 16th pick in the draft? I mean, obviously it's valuable, and I'm a draft guy too, so I always think that there's opportunities to hit on those mid-round draft picks. But how much value does that 16th pick have compared to taking a shot at someone like Jabari Parker, who was the second pick and, you know, who maybe does have prodigious scoring ability if he can get healthy and sort of figure out a way to fit the modern NBA? So I don't think that, like, taking on salary was objectively the right way to do it. I mean, what are you going to do, pay $30 million for the 17th pick in the draft? Like, from ownership's perspective, it just doesn't sound great. Take another Chandler Hutchison. I mean, maybe he'll be a good rotation player, but maybe not someone who changes the calculus of the rebuild totally, in my opinion. So I think, you know, what the Bulls are trying to do is obvious. They got a young player at every single position now. They got a young point guard. I mean, you know, they're stacked at every position, really, with a young guy. My thing with the Bulls is, like, these guys have tools and they have talent, but they're mostly one-way players. Like, Dunn is a great defensive player who has some major holes in his offensive game. LaVine and Parker are scorers who can't play defense. Markkanen, I think, was better than expected defensively. And Carter, I really think, is a stud. But my biggest concern with the Jabari signing in general is that I think that Markkanen and Carter should be the two guys they're building around. Instead, those guys are going to get totally marginalized as Parker and LaVine just chuck bad shots. I mean, if you want to go back to the pre-draft comparison for Carter, it was Al Horford. We didn't really realize how good Al Horford was for a long time, you know what I mean? Even though he was on good Atlanta teams. Why? It's because Josh Smith and Joe Johnson were chucking bad shots the whole time.
Yeah.
You really needed to wait till Horford matured to really appreciate his game when he slid up to the five finally. And they're running the offense through him a little bit more. I mean, if it's me, I want the ball in Wendell Carter's hands. He already looks like a 10-year veteran out there. I would run the offense through Carter the way they used to run it through Noah. Now what's going to happen? They're going to tell Markkanen to stand in the corner and space the floor, just like they used to do with Mirotić when he was bad. and they're going to tell Carter to go rebound. And it's like, is this? These are the two brightest pieces of the rebuild, and they're going to be totally marginalized now.
Yeah, as we're talking with Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation here on Locked On Bulls, you can follow Ricky at @SBN_Ricky, talking about the logic behind this rebuild and the addition of Parker and what you just said about marginalizing Markkanen and Wendell. That's one of my biggest issues as well. Not that just Parker is such a classic Bulls front office signing and definitely an overpay, as you said. There's not a whole lot of evidence that the Bulls were bidding against anyone other than themselves here. But it's the fact that I see that panning out the same way you do. Markkanen is just going to turn into like a spot-up shooter at the three when really what I want him doing is working on the versatility of his offensive game and not putting too much stock into summer league. But you had a great piece on what Wendell looks like after his experience in summer league, and he looked like one of the better players in summer league. And he has sky's the limit potential on both ends of the floor. And I think Parker's just going to take away from that, which leads me to my next question for you, Ricky. Let's just say, assumptively, Parker stays healthy, you know, doesn't tear his ACL a third time, has a decent 18-19 year with the Bulls, where he definitely still looks like a bad player on the defensive end and an okay player on the offensive end who has some issues picking and choosing where to get his looks, but he certainly looks like a player who can, at times, score. The Bulls then in 2019, when they were projected to be one of the teams with the most cap space, that has changed since the LaVine signing. They have the option for Parker. Realistically, in my mind, I don't see them luring Klay Thompson away from the Bay Area. I don't see them getting Kyrie Irving. I don't see them getting Kawhi Leonard. I don't see them getting Kemba Walker. I don't think the Bulls, for all they've talked about having this financial flexibility, are going to land anybody, because we have no proof of that in recent history. I mean, I'm worried about, even if Parker has a mediocre season, they're either going to pick up the second year and pay him $20 million again to be a blah player on a blah team, or even worse, renegotiate and sign him to a long-term deal that he doesn't deserve. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and the real – so, first of all, those veteran free agents, those guys going on their third contract, Kyrie, Kawhi, Klay, Kemba, Jimmy – those guys, to be in the position to sign one of those guys, it's you need to be in the position when the Bulls sign Boozer, right? Where you have a really good young team and one piece is going to put you over the top. I don't know if the Bulls are in that position. I mean, maybe they think they are. But now, if you look right now, they don't even have max cap space, even without Parker. They'd only have $35 million, and those guys' contracts start at $40-plus million. So that's unrealistic. What was your question? I'm sorry.
The question is, that's my fear, is that they swing and miss on all those top-tier guys who they may not even have the space for, and instead take a mediocre Jabari Parker season and say, all right, well, that's enough to pay you big money, kind of like they just did with Zach LaVine.
And part of the problem with – I don't mind giving Parker $20 million a year hypothetically, because it is only a one-year deal and there's not a ton of risk involved from the team side, in my opinion, for the Bulls. But here's the problem. Let's say he does have a good year, as you said, at least, a good year scoring. Now you're setting the market for his next. It's not like they're going to give him a long-term deal where he makes $12 million a year. You know what I mean? You set the market against yourself for no reason. His next contract is obviously going to be dependent on what he's making this year, whether they pick up the option or not, or sign him to a long-term deal or whatever. It's you set the market on Jabari Parker against yourself for no reason. So that's the only thing with the contract that sort of bothers me. Otherwise, you kind of got to respect it a little bit from the Bulls side, I think, because there's just not much risk involved. I mean, you get Jabari Parker for 1 year. I mean, they gave him all their cap space. It's who cares? They weren't going to sign anyone else with that. I wish they would have kept Nwaba, which they can still sign with a mid-level exception, I believe. They won't do that, though. So I don't know. There's a lot of play here. The real question is, who are the brightest pieces of this rebuild? Do the Bulls believe that Parker and LaVine are the biggest stars? Do they realize how good Wendell Carter is? If the Bulls were given the opportunity to draft worse players ahead of Wendell Carter, I'm sure they would have done it. Drafting Wendell Carter, I think, does not show that the Bulls have figured it out. If anything, I think they got lucky. They would have taken Bombo over him. They would have taken Bagley over him. Right. They lucked into getting a stud player at number 7, because guess what? the teams ahead of them in the draft lottery standings, those are shitty teams too. They're idiots. Like they all these teams are bad.
Yeah. One of whom was the Kings, who were the only other team interested in LaVine and Parker.
Right. And it just, you know, it exposes them a little bit. So to me, you know, the brightest pieces of this rebuild, the reason this rebuild is promising is because I really think that Carter is going to be a stud. And I think that Markkanen was very good last year, and he's going to continue to get better, and he's a great fit in the modern NBA. You just wonder if those guys get pushed to the margins a little more now that Parker and LaVine are hypothetically going to be hoisting the majority of the shots on offense. You know what this team really needs? Here's a take. This team needs Rondo. This team would really benefit from Rondo. Because they need a high IQ point guard. Dunn makes a lot of mistakes. He never puts up a big assist rate. If they're actually going to try to, like, develop the younger pieces and stuff, they, like, who's their backup point guard? Cam Payne? Like, give me a break. Yeah. They need a veteran high IQ point guard who could really rally the troops and get everyone playing cohesive basketball. I think Rondo would be great on this team.
And for those young Bulls players who are on this team as they've begun the rebuild, who were on the team when Rondo was there for a season, all love him. LeBron James loves him and brought him to the Lakers because, as you said, he's one of the smartest players in the league. And the Rondo signing when they did it with Wade made no sense. They just signed him a year too early.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame because this Bulls team, I do think, I mean, they have a lot of intriguing pieces. Like, I've always been high on LaVine. I hope Jabari works out because I love Jabari. And he definitely has talent, but it's like, just throwing out a bunch of 23-year-olds or younger out there, if they're actually trying to win and not trying to, like, stealth tank, which I don't think they're smart enough to do, but might just happen anyway. It might just still be bad. I mean, despite how bad the East is, there's a chance they're still one of the worst teams. You look around the landscape, who's definitely worse than them? Atlanta, Orlando, Sacramento, the Knicks. And that might be it. Unless I'm forgetting about someone, like Memphis is trying to win this year. Dallas is trying to win this year. So, I mean, everyone in the West is better than them but Sacramento. And in the East, is just a handful of teams. So, I do think there's a chance the Bulls could still be really bad. If they actually think that they're trying to, like, gun for the playoffs this year, they need some sort of, like, veteran point guard, I think, just because that would make the lives of these young players so much easier.
The one common theme I'm getting from all of this, and I think over the last week or two, Matt and I have discussed this before, but the common theme I'm getting from you, Ricky, is that it seems like you, as well as Bulls fans, as well as us, as anybody else who watches this team day in and day out or covers this team day in and day out, year one, we knew what the goal was. We knew what the plan was. They were transparent about it for the most part, about what they were doing. And the rebuild, for the most part, went the way we wanted it to go as far as getting into the lottery. I know they didn't get into the top five the way we wanted them to, and that was a big disappointment that the core three guys only played 12 games together. And at times they were playing their starters when they shouldn't. But overall, the goal was to try to get as high in the lottery as possible. This season and moving forward as far as this rebuild goes, the Parker and the LaVine signings on top of taking Wendell Carter Jr. and trying to figure out a way for these young guys to win has me landing back into a spot of, I don't really know what the direction of this rebuild is now. Year two, year three, year four. I don't really understand where the Bulls are trying to go here. And we're talking about five or six different possibilities for this team. So I guess my question to you is, do you understand or do you have any idea where exactly this rebuild is going? And is there any other team that you can maybe make a similar comparison to what the Bulls are doing in just a year and a half? Like, we're going only into the second year of a rebuild. Is there any teams that are similar? And do you have any idea where this direction is going from year two? And do you feel similar the way that I do?
Well, I mean, I don't think the direction – I mean, they're being pretty transparent, I feel like. They're just trying to get the best young talent they can at every position, which they've done. We'll see if, you know, they've actually done that, or do they just have, like, four power forwards. They think that they have this. So I think that, you know, they didn't want to build through the top of the draft. Reinsdorf or whoever did not like being one of the worst teams in the league. So now, I mean, you have Parker – you know, maybe in their mind, Parker turns into Harden, right? Like the former high draft pick who realizes potential when he gets on another team. they're obviously super high on Zach LaVine. If they gave him that contract, maybe they think, you know, with Zach LaVine staying healthy, he can be an all-star caliber player. They probably think Jabari can be an all-star caliber player. Well, now maybe in their eyes, you have a team with a talented young guy at every position who can grow together, and that this is going to be your core. And that they don't need to, you know, try to get the second or third pick in the draft to find, you know, the next piece that's going to put them over the top. So I don't think that it's like a mystery what they're trying to do. I mean, they got a guy under 24 who was a top 10 pick or whatever at every single position, besides for LaVine, who was the 12th pick, but who's already averaged 20 points a game in the NBA as a 21-year-old. So they got talent. I think it's pretty transparent what they're trying to do. They want these guys to grow together. We'll see if they have the mix right, though, because for as talented as some of these guys are, I just don't know if their skill sets really fit together.
Just to follow up really fast, I know we were talking about like Chris Dunn and Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine and some of these guys' flaws and how this is all going to mix together. And your point a little bit ago was that you could see this team falling back into the bottom five of the teams next season. And so to me, that questions a lot of things that would have to go wrong this season, right? Parker would have to get re-injured or just have a terrible year. Zach LaVine would have to look awful next year. Chris Dunn would have to look like he's playing for himself, like you were talking about with the contract extension. Lauri Markkanen just stagnates and doesn't take a step forward, which are all possibilities. I think any combination of one of those four players is possible in a second year of a rebuild, trying to figure out where everybody fits, what everybody's role is. So that's where I just keep coming back to the idea of, yeah, maybe acquiring young talent is their goal. And that might be a mini goal. But to me, to try and understand 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, where this team is exactly going and what they see this team doing has me confused, because maybe I'm wrong, but don't you need two stars in order to win in this league? Don't you need three stars in order to win in this league? How do you get to the point where you can bring in a superstar into this league, into this team, into Chicago? And I think banking on the fact that Markkanen, Dunn, LaVine, and Parker are all going to be a part of your core, and you could throw Wendell Carter Jr. in there too as well. Those five guys, do the Bulls feel like that's their future there? Because if it doesn't, then I don't really understand where this is going, because we talked about Parker having a second year option for next year. We've mentioned before, what do you do with guys like Bobby Portis are coming up for an extension, Chris Dunn, who we're talking about an extension as well. If Parker has a good year, they pick up his option, they're going to have $15 million really to spend in cap space next season. So you look at that, and if they do pick up his option, then to me, that's saying, okay, we're comfortable with the five guys that we consider our core of young players, and this is what we're going to run out there for the future. And to me, that doesn't scream a team that's going to be a top three, top four team in the East for the next 5-6 years, the way that the Celtics and the 76ers have built things up. And I know they've hit on stars before, but that's what I keep going back to, is like, while Bulls fans might be excited about what they have right now, how does that get you any closer to an NBA Finals? Because remember, just 2 years ago, we were all complaining about how the Bulls were mired in mediocrity and they just loved to hanging around this 5, 6, 7, 8 seed. And frankly, the rebuild was a chance to reset everything and to find a way to be that team to get to the NBA Finals. So that's where I come in, and I'm confused as far as what the long-term projection of this rebuild is. And maybe they have no idea what that is. But to me, I just feel like from year one now into year two, things have gotten a little bit hazy now. Like the money that was tossed at LaVine, the money that was tossed at Parker, while it's still flexible as far as Parker's contract goes, I'm still just confused as far as where this is going long term.
Yeah, but like building through free agency for one guy who's going to be making $40 million a year entering his third deal, I mean, is that a better plan? Like, I don't really know. At that point, you're paying for guys on the downside of their career, more on the upside of their career. So I think they're looking at LaVine and Parker as guys who are going on their second deal. You're going to be paying LaVine through his age 24 through 27 seasons. Those should be the best years of his career. You're paying him $20 million. If you were to sign Jimmy Butler, I mean, it would have been his age 30 through 34 seasons, and he would have been making twice as much money. He would have been making $40 million. So I don't think that, like, it's some mystery what the Bulls are trying to do. I mean, they probably think Jabari Parker has all-star level talent. They think that Zach LaVine is all-star level talent. They probably think that about Chris Dunn and Markkanen and Wendell Carter, too. So they probably think that they have a good young mix that can grow together and that these are going to be the guys who are going to be sort of the next iteration of a competitive Bulls team. Like, they think that this is going to be the next dang Noah Rose core. And maybe it will be. I mean, I keep going back to this, but like in the right situation, I do think Jabari could be pretty good. I think LaVine could be good. But it's like, how do the pieces complement each other? Basketball is the ultimate team game. You got five guys working together. You got to play both ends of the floor. So that's where the question to me is like, do the Bulls have any idea what they're doing? To me, signing Parker exposes them, again, as not knowing what they're doing. Like, you thought maybe they learned their lesson after the Wade. So, but the Jabari signing is so reminiscent of the Wade signing. I mean, you're like leaning into the marketing angle of it, you know, the hometown aspect. If Jabari was born in California, did the Bulls sign him to $20 million a year? I mean, probably not. And why does that matter? It shouldn't
right.
matter.
Exactly.
With that being said, I am a total sucker. And I've followed Jabari's career since he was 15 years old. I want this to work. It would be amazing if this worked. It would really be a feel-good story. Jabari is such a good guy. And I feel like some of that gets lost in, like, us nerds on Twitter being like, whoa, looking at his, like, on-off numbers and stuff. There are a lot, like, the community is going to love Jabari Parker. People on the south side of Chicago view Jabari Parker as just, like, this, like, I don't want to say savior, but, like, this, like, important figure in the community. You know, he was a great player and a can't-miss prospect for so long before he had the hard luck with the two ACLs. I think his problems on the basketball court go beyond that. But to me, what the Bulls are trying to do is this is their five. They want to roll with these guys. They did, they hedged their risk on Parker for sure. Like, if he gets hurt again, they don't have to bring him back next season. So they hedged their risk, which is good. But, I mean, we'll see. Even though it seems like a low-risk move because it's a one-year deal, I don't actually know if it's a low-risk move because you're risking marketing Carter's development and you're sort of like saying that these are our five guys going forward because hypothetically they're not going to be bad enough to compete for a top pick in 2019. So there's a lot of play here. I don't think that the Bulls are like pulling the wool over anyone's eyes here, though. Like, they think Jabari Parker is really good. They give him $20 million a year. They gave Zach Levine $80 million. I think he's a stud. So, I mean – you know, that's what they're trying to do. They got a young guy at every position. Now they're going to see how good this team is. Will this team be as good as the dang Noah Rose Bulls? I mean, I don't think there's any chance they will be, but, you know, maybe John Paxson thinks they will be.
Yeah, Ricky, I mean, I'm with you talking about the whole hometown kid factor. And look, I'll preface it by saying Jabari Parker walks the walk when it comes to spending his time and his hard-earned dollars helping the city of Chicago and Milwaukee, and especially the youth of each of those cities, and good on him for that. But I don't think that where you're from and where you played high school basketball should have any correlation to how much you're worth and whether or not a team should sign you. And I think that the Bulls put far too much weight into that with this signing and with Wade's signing. But along those lines of these two guys you were just talking about in Parker and LaVine and how they fit into what this team is going to look like, I've had all sorts of people come at me on Twitter for saying, oh my God, the combination of those two players playing at the two and the three, where Parker is the one who will be unfortunately playing out of position. First of all, a lot of Bulls fans think I'm wrong and think you're wrong and think everyone who's saying that Parker can't play the three, who shouldn't play the three, are wrong, and that he's definitely more suited to the three than the four. I disagree flat out. And then my big problem on playing LaVine and Parker together at the two and the three on the defensive end, everybody's saying, well, like, whatever, they can score a bunch of points, and the Parker getting $20 million and LaVine getting $19.5 million is like, well, there are a lot of players who are offensively gifted that play in this league and make a lot of money, and they don't play defense. And then they cite people like Steph Curry and James Harden, and I'm like, okay, are Jabari Parker or Zach LaVine MVPs of this league? Because the answer is no. So I just wanted to get your quick take on what you project to be the average night from that pair starting together at the two and the three defensively, and just how bad that might be.
I mean, let's talk more about, like, what is the avenue towards success? So what's the avenue towards success for this? I mean, there's a couple things. First of all, Barry's got to up the three-point volume. If you look at his stats, he's always been a decent three-point shooter, but if you go back to early in his career, Jason Kidd literally wouldn't let him shoot three. He would not let him attempt a three. But he's always been about a 35% shooter, but he's taken, like, two a game or under two a game. All right, so he's got to take, like, five or six a game. And LaVine has got to just let it fly from three as well when it's a good shot. So, to me, their avenue to being a good team is to be an offensive-first team that jacks a lot of three-pointers. And here's the biggest thing, as we've been talking about throughout the podcast, is just sharing the ball. Like, LaVine missed marketing on so many pick-and-pop opportunities last year, almost as a victim of his own talent, because he can hit those tough shots, so he wants to take them. He wants the glory. He wants to be the guy. I mean, to me, Markkanen and Carter should be the guys, not LaVine and Parker. Is that realistic? Probably not. But sharing the ball and playing team-oriented basketball is really what this is going to come down to. I think it's going to have to start with, you know, these guys sacrificing their points per game, which is going to be tough because Jabari's playing for a contract, Dunn's playing for a contract. But if they share the ball, shoot a lot of threes, I think they could be okay, potentially, on offense. And then defensively,
I mean, they're giving up 130 a night, right?
Well, defensively, you heard Paxton say it. He's like, they're young guys who are athletic. They should be able to play defense. It's like, that sounds
Dunn can play defense and
for your own bad evaluation, right? You're like, well, Jabari Parker should have been good at defense. It's not my fault. Well, he's not good at defense, so it is your fault because you signed him. It's like they're already giving the players all of the agency in the equation when really their evaluation in the first place is what's so poor. So, I mean, I don't really, like, what's going to happen? Like, I think that LaVine and Parker are going to lead the team in shots per game. I think that what should happen is that Carter and Markkanen lead the team in shots per game. And I think the Bulls are probably going to win around 30, low 30 games. They're going to be a bad defensive team that when they get hot, you know, Jabari Parker is going to look awesome. LaVine's going to look awesome. They're going to pass the eye test. But are they going to pass the real test of winning basketball games at the NBA level? That's where I'm skeptical.
All right, Ricky, one more question before we let you get out of here. Should this thing just completely burn down in 2018, 2019, and we're looking at a Bulls team next February, March, April that could potentially be in the top five, top seven of the lottery again next season. Give me your way too early prediction for a few guys that maybe Bulls fans should just keep a close eye on when college basketball turns around next season. Talking about maybe top guys like Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett and even Romeo Langford. Give me a handful of guys that you would tell Bulls fans to go watch as just kind of a backup plan should this entire thing burn down and we're looking at a potential lottery pick again next season.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about this draft. And actually, the draft after this is probably going to be the weakest draft in 20 years. I think the current high school players are the weakest, the current high school seniors are the weakest crop of talent.
Is that LaMelo Ball's class?
Yeah, he would be a senior. But like James Wiseman's the number one player, Vernon Carey Jr., Cole Anthony. I mean, those are the top guys if you look at the recruiting rankings. I've seen those guys play. I cover recruiting. I cover the draft for SB Nation. So for as bad as the 2019 draft supposedly is, the 2019 draft is not going to be good as the last two drafts. The last two drafts were chock full of good players. I don't think that's going to be the case this year, but what I will say is it is a lot of wins in 2019. RJ Barrett, I have some question marks, but, I mean, he's been incredibly productive at a young age at every level. He might end up being a total stud. I mean, he's definitely the strong front runner to be the first pick right now. RJ Barrett's the Canadian wing who's going to Duke. Duke is the team to watch this year for the first time in the modern era. They have the top three recruits in the country all on the same team. Barrett will be playing alongside Cam Reddish, who's my favorite talent. His numbers haven't really backed up his talent, but, I mean, he's like Paul George or Tracy McGrady out there. He is so smooth, 6'7 ball handler who can shoot it off the dribble or off the catch, can also pass it. His numbers just haven't been very good at the AAU and international level, but, I mean, you watch him play and you can just see that, you know, he looks like a guy who could be an NBA All-Star to me. And then Zion Williamson, who's a really interesting fit in the modern NBA, because he's 6'6 and 275 pounds, and he can't shoot. But, man, is he an explosive athlete, and he's an aggressive defender. He's going to attack the glass, attack opposing players' shop lockers, so he's really interesting. There's a kid from France who's like a, whose name I'm not going to even try to pronounce, who's like a 6'9 shooter who seems pretty good. It's a lot of wings next year. I don't think it's a very good draft class in general compared to the last two drafts, but I think the 2020 draft will be even worse. I do love the high school juniors. The current junior class I think is really good. So 2021, maybe that's when the Bulls can, you know, tear this down again and do a bad, short-sighted, quick build. But those are a few guys in the next draft to keep an eye on. I really like DeAndre Hunter if you're looking for a guy who, you know, maybe the Bulls could take. He was a redshirt freshman at Virginia last year, was the ACC sixth man of the year, decided to come back to school because he broke his hand at the end of the season, did not play in Virginia's NCAA tournament loss to UMBC. So I really like DeAndre Hunter. I don't think maybe he has like number one overall pick upside, but you know, if the Bulls are picking 10 or 12, I think that DeAndre Hunter from Virginia is a name to keep an eye on because he would be a good fit with this roster in terms of the type of players they need, and I think he's a pretty talented guy, too.
All right, Ricky. A pleasure as always. Appreciate the insight as always. He's Ricky O'Donnell, college hoops and NBA editor at SB Nation. Get all of his great NBA and college basketball analysis content at SBNation.com. Follow him on Twitter at SBN underscore Ricky. Ricky, enjoy the rest of your summer, my man, and we look forward to talking to you again soon, sometime around training camp, let's say.
All right. Cool. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Take it easy.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Once again, want to thank our guest in Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation. Bulls insight, NCAA buckets insight, everything that you want to find out about hoops over at SBNation.com. Go follow Ricky. Follow Ricky on Twitter, too, at SBN underscore Ricky. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. I'm not nothing but that channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. We're doing mailbag tomorrow, so hit us up with all of your text messages, your questions, your reaction, your voicemails. 331-979-1369 is the place to do it. You can follow us on social media, too, on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. For Matt Peck, for our guest, Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation, I'm Jordan Malley. We are out, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan, Matt, and Ricky, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com